It's not just music, it's your way of life. How you live, live on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
And joining us once again is Pastor Joseph Farah, joining us to give us some perspective on the covenant of Abraham. Pastor Farah, good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us. Pastor Farah.
How are you? Good afternoon, and how are you today?
Right. Thank you very much. I got you. I hear you. All right, Pastor, let's talk about now this bountiful covenant. Go ahead.
Sure. Yesterday, I think we were looking at a different covenant, and that was the covenant of the rainbow and how important it is.
Correct.
So today we are looking at the covenant of Abraham. I think yesterday it is important that we indicated that there are two types of covenants, the ones which are conditional and the ones which are unconditional. So the ones which are conditional, these are bilateral, where both parties must participate, must take part. But in a unilateral or unconditional promise or covenant, like we indicated yesterday, it is the one where God is responsible. The covenant for yesterday, it was the responsibility of God. It was God giving his word. And so even in the covenant of Abraham, it is like the one we had yesterday. So it is God giving a covenant to Abraham. So apparently, God has these human beings, his friends, but then they don't know him. And because they don't know him, he wants to reveal himself, because ultimately God wants us to know him at that personal level. And so because people do not know him, and at the time of Abraham, there's this big thing or the in thing or the trending thing at that time was a big name, you know. There was this you know, grouping of people who wanted to make a name for themselves. And because they wanted to make a name, nobody made that name. Instead, they were displaced. And so because, you know, God contextualized, he knew to say what is trending now is name and all these things. So he comes to Abram and he tells him, "Hi, Mr. Man. Hi there. This is God here." And Abram is wondering what is happening. And so he tells him, "Okay, I have a proposal. I have a promise. I want us to get into a relationship, and this is something that I want you to think about." And so this is where the Bible tells us now in Genesis chapter 12, verse 1 to 3. So God tells Abraham, "Now the Lord said to Abraham, go from your country and from your kindred and your father's house to the land I will show you." Okay, so Abraham, from nowhere, he listens to a voice that is invisible, and it is giving him an instruction. You know, in this quinquennium, we are talking about, "I will go, I will go." And we see this is stressed over and over, and God tells him, "Go." This is an imperative. There's no discussion. There's no discussion. You know, you need to move out of this place. Now, as you move out, Abraham, this is what I want you to understand. This will be your take home. "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great." All those Nimrod and his, you know, his colleagues, they failed to make that name. But I want to tell you, if you move out of this place, I will make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. And everybody who blesses you, I will also bless them. And all those who dishonors you, I will curse them. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. I mean, who could refuse? Who could refuse that offer? You know? So this is what has been put on the table. And so this is the basis. This is the basis upon which this covenant is going to be made. So God tells Abraham, he emphasizes five times, "I will do this. I will." By the way, let me just, you know, digress a little bit. It is the responsibility of God, or it is the responsibility of the gods, whatever you subscribe, to bless you, to protect you, to lift you up, to give you all the aspirations of your mind and beyond your imagination.
Forgive me, Pastor, for interrupting. You said it is the responsibility of God.
Yes.
And then you said it is the responsibility of the gods.
Exactly.
Are they?
So for those who don't believe in God, you know, to those who don't believe, by the way, in the ancient Near East, where Abraham is at this moment, they are gods. Are we together?
No. We are not together at all. Mfunes, I need you to explain what you mean by that.
Okay. Let me slow down. You and me, we are Christians. We believe in God, who is in heaven, our God. And this is the God who calls Abraham. So I'm saying it is the responsibility of God to bless. You cannot come into, let's put Christianity aside. Let's talk about, let's say, Satanism or any religion.
No, Funis. I need you to clarify the part about the gods first.
Exactly. That's where I'm going, actually.
Okay.
That is where I'm going.
Okay.
So for you to be hooked in that religion, there should be a promise. And that promise keeps you going. Right? So those gods, if they are promising you blessings, it is you looking forward to have that fulfillment of that blessing. So unless that blessing comes your way, or there is, in fact, if there's no promise, the question is, what are you even doing there? It means you're in the wrong place. You're not even supposed to be there. So what is keeping you there is the promise. So this is where now I'm trying to augment to say, it is now imperative upon God to bless you. It is his duty. Because if there is no blessing involved, then the question is, why are you there? What are you doing?
Yeah, for me, that question does not even arise in Fundisi. I'm still stuck on the existence of gods.
Uh-huh.
Explain what you meant by that, Mfundisi, that there are gods. Where Abraham was, there were gods.
Okay, maybe you may not be the only one who may not really understand. In the world where Abraham is, let's call it the ancient Near East. Okay, are we there?
I'm listening with all of my senses are alert. I'm listening. Go ahead.
In the ancient Near East, there are gods. You know, you go to Egypt, there's the Pharaoh, who is a god. There's the Nile River, it's a god. There are these frogs, they are gods.
Funis, the Pharaoh is a mere mortal. He may think he's a god, but he is not a god. The Nile River is not a god. It's not even a living thing, let alone it being a god. I'm not quite sure I follow what you mean when you say the Pharaoh is a god. Mm-hmm. In Mesopotamia, they are gods. The Nile River is a god. They're not gods.
No, they are not.
But you're saying they are.
How best can I put it? In the minds of the Near Ancient East, there exist the gods. All right? And then amongst these gods, there's this contention on who is who. So our God is not known. You see, when we are reading the scripture, as we already know how the story ends or how the story is narrated, but in the mind of Abraham, at his moment, his colleagues, his neighbors, the world where they live, they have many gods. But you and me, we know that these gods are not existent. Because even to this very day, we have people who still worship gods and they think those gods are gods, but they are not. Because we only have one God.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Let's move on, Funis. It doesn't, but it may be just me who is stuck there. Go on, Funis. Let me not keep you. Go ahead.
Okay. So I wish we have this appreciation that it is the responsibility of God That is for you and me who subscribe to one God, that God must bless us, God must protect us, and God must, by the way, before we digress, I want you to be satisfied. In our African setup, we still have to this very day people who do not believe in our God. And they get their protection. I don't know what you call them in South Africa, but here in Zambia, there's what we there are these charms, you know, where people put even on their bodies. They keep them in their bedrooms. They feed them. And, they, you know, it's like their lucky charms. They give them employment. You know, they give them success. When people go for elections, when people are voting, they are almost under some kind of a spell. And so it is those gods they subscribe to who blesses them.
Okay? Let's go back again. You're saying those gods bless them?
Exactly.
How does a stone bless you? How does a log bless you? How does a tree? You carve out a tree, you cut it down to size, you shape it into something, and then that which you have shaped blesses you? How?
So in their minds, this is, you know, these satanic powers whereby what you believe, you know, you'll be operating under this illusion. You remember in the story of Laban, trying to catch up with Jacob and his children.
Yes.
And then he was looking for his God.
Yes. His idols.
Is there by any chance you guys, could you have picked my... So this God is defenseless.
Yeah.
He can't defend himself. And Rebecca has to sit on this...
Rachel.
On this God.
Rachel, not I mean, Rebecca. Rachel.
Yeah. Rachel sits on... God and says, and you know, Dad, I'm on, you know, this arrangement, so I can't stand, you know. So this God, you can sit on it, you can do whatever, you know. So this is the world in which Abraham is operating, and so this is important for biblical background. In the ancient Near East, this was what was prevalent, and God was mindful of that. Because he knew Abraham is existing in such kind of circumstances. So he tells him, I will bless you, I will give you a land, and I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And so to cement this relationship, this covenant, he tells him there should be a sign. Like we noticed yesterday, the sign for the floods was the rainbow. But this time, there is a specific sign for this covenant to indicate that we are now in agreement. And this covenant is circumcision. And so it is required from this old man, Abram, 75 years.
Sorry. There you go again, Mfundisi. Was circumcision the covenant?
It was a sign of the covenant.
A sign of a covenant. It was not the covenant in and by itself. No, it was merely a sign of the covenant.
Exactly, just right. Like the rainbow.
Yeah.
Just like the rainbow was not the covenant.
That's right.
The covenant was God himself saying, I will not do this. But this is the sign.
That's
that
it.
This is going to do.
Absolutely.
Just like the Sabbath, it is a sign of God's covenant,
yeah.
His relationship. He is the creator. So the Sabbath is the sign.
Okay.
The rainbow is the sign. And circumcision now is the sign that we have a covenant.
Yeah.
And that is why this was so strong to a point where Moses did not have it easy when he failed to circumcise his son in Exodus chapter 4, verse 24.
Okay.
Because he did not understand the depth when God says, this must be done. Definitely, it needs to be done because circumcision was very important.
Yeah.
And whosoever was operating outside this ambit was alienating themselves from the relationship with God.
Yeah.
So that you get Exodus 4, verse 24 to 26.
Okay.
If I could read it quickly, at a lodging place on the way the Lord met him and sought to put him to death, then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet.
Mm.
And with it, she said, "Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me. Why haven't you listened to your God?" So he let him alone. It was then that she said, "A bridegroom of blood because of circumcision. You will know how your God is, and you want to disobey him. So you want my son to die? I will not allow it." So it is the mother now that goes in and circumcises her own son, because God was going to see to it that the son of Moses does not survive because of the covenant that he had put in place with his friend Abraham.
Was it the son that was in harm's way, or was it Moses himself?
It was actually the son.
All right, let's read again. Show me. Where are you reading it from again, first?
Exodus chapter 4, verse 26. I mean, from verse 24 to 26.
Exodus chapter?
Chapter 4.
Which verses do you want us to read?
We can just read, since they're just two. You can begin from verse 24.
At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met Moses and was about to kill him. But Zipporah took a flint knife, cut off her son's foreskin, and touched Moses' feet with it. "Surely you are a bridegroom of blood to me," she said. So the Lord let him alone at that time, she said. Bridegroom of blood, referring to circumcision. The Lord said to Aaron, blah, 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 blah. It appears to me, Mfundisi, as I'm reading it, God's intention was to kill Moses, not Moses' son.
Yes, the point was that Moses failed to do what he was supposed to do to his son.
Yeah, I understand that part. My question was, who was God going to kill? Because Zipporah was not trying to save the son. Zipporah was trying to save Moses, right?
She was actually saving the husband.
That's right.
For failing to do what he was supposed to do.
To the son, absolutely. So God wanted to kill Moses, not the son.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I wanted to clarify that part.
The anger of God was against Moses.
That's right.
He failed to circumcise his son.
That's correct. Yes. All right.
So now, what is of interest? You know, this covenant is big and deep, because when Abraham agrees, he is told to you will be a great nation. But then this man doesn't, you know, they have this situation in the home. There is no child. And so it now takes faith to understand who is speaking, who has said, "I will make you great." So for Abraham, it really did not matter when he looked at his present. Of course, he was stressed and all these things. But the fact that the words came from God, and this is where now Abraham is credited to be the father of faith, because he believed what was impossible. You know, something that was not making sense. He believes the promise. And the promise is that he will be great. He will have, you know, through him and his wife, children were going to come. And the blessings were sure that those who misfire with them, they will face the wrath of God. And the big, big, big punchline is that the whole world will be blessed through Abraham. But this process will take time. It will be a long process for it to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And this was not a spiritualized situation. It was a literal blessing. God told them, "I will give you the land. You are going to possess the land," you know. So the promise was sure.
Okay. All right. So this idea of this promise of God blessing him, why? What does the Bible tell us why he chose Abraham, because as you correctly pointed out, Mfundisi, he was raised in an idolater's family. His father, Terah, was an idolater. He too was a transactor in idols up until God called him. Why choose him? What does the Bible tell us?
Yes, because this storyline, you know, we are tracing it from Adam, actually. You remember when we were talking about having a new beginning yesterday, where Noah must begin again. So he begins the garden. And then in a little while, he misfires like the first Adam. He is also found naked and ashamed. You know, he is found naked and ashamed like the first Adam was naked and ashamed.
Okay.
You know, and then what's happening? I thought we are having a new beginning, but it's like these people can't listen. You know, it's like we are not making progress.
Yeah.
And so we understand how Canaan comes in, and Canaan is cursed. Canaan is cursed because of what the father Ham had done. So Noah curses the grandson, indirectly cursing his son to say, and so this Canaan, where he will settle, this is where the children of Abraham, the blessing, the promise will come to overtake that land, where they would find the Hittites, the Gigatites, the Jebusites, and all these people bundled together. So the line where Abraham is coming from, he is not picked at random. God has an interest in these people because they are his people. They are practicing idolatry, yes, but Abraham has, I don't know whether I can say, he has a percentage. There's a certain fear, you know. There's a certain fear in him, and God says, all right, fine. I know you are not worthy. You are not the perfect man, but looking at probably the skill sets that you have, I can work with you, you know. So that is how Abraham is picked, and, you know, he is chosen, not him choosing God, but God chooses him. To say, I want to fulfill. I have a plan. You know, I had this first Adam. He didn't understand.
What was the skill set you identifying? I don't recall that part. What was the skill set that God identified with Abraham?
Okay, so in Abraham we have this, you know, the faith, the aspect of a childlike faith, some kind of a blind faith. You know, following something you have not seen. And this kind of trait is even seen even in the time of Noah, because...
Noah... In Abraham, I'm interested to see where did Abraham demonstrate this trait such that God would then call him out to the promised land? Because I always was of the view that there was no relationship between God or Abraham up until that very moment when God spoke to Abraham. But now you're saying there was a skill set, there was a trait, this childlike faith. When did he demonstrate this childlike faith?
Okay, so you have rightly put it. There is no relationship, because in the home where Abraham is raised, there are several gods. So in my sanctified imagination, God is able to see, he has seen many people around. So, you know, there should be something in Abraham that, you know, God looks at and says, okay, all these guys are mischievous. All these guys, you know, they are problematic, but this one, you know, he's coming from this line. Is traceable, and so I think I can work with him in terms of recording to say prior to this, this is what Abraham has done. It's not there.
Where did you get it from, Funis, that there were these traits, this skill set that God had identified?
Okay, so when you are looking at how now Abraham would be interacting with God. You know, when you look at how Abraham is interacting with God, you can tell to say...
Where do you see this interaction?
Pardon?
Take us to the verse where you see this interaction.
This interaction is beginning Genesis chapter 12, verse 1.
Chapter 12.
Chapter 12, verse 1. This is the only known beginning. You know, actually, in this section, it is the beginning of the election of the nation of Israel. Mm-hmm. So you have this.
But there was But there was no nation of Israel then, Mfundisi.
I'm saying the election. It is now being called.
There was no way God could elect a nation of Israel without there being an Israel. Israel was only to come two generations after Abraham. There was not even an idea of Israel during the time of Abraham.
Yes, sir. This is what I'm saying. This is the election, the calling of the nation. This is where it is beginning.
How, Mfundisi? That's what I'm trying to understand. How is the nation of Israel called and yet there is no Israel up until over 100 years down the line?
Okay. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. God tells Abraham, get out of this place, right? You are going to the land I will show you. He is talking to an individual.
Correct.
So, when this man responds by faith without even questioning, and this person he is following, he doesn't know. But because of that blind faith, and because of the promise that this unknown being, invisible, has given to Abraham, he says, I will make you a great nation. Now, this is where now the calling of the nation is beginning.
Which nation?
Because listen to this. I will make you into a great nation.
Yes.
So there's a proposal that we are going to establish a nation, you and me.
Yeah.
But the nation is not yet.
Yes.
But the nation is now being called. In theology, we call this the election of the nation of Israel. It is not yet, but it has been called. It has been initiated. The process must begin. And that is why throughout the history, the covenant will be repeated. I promised this to my friend Abraham. Even when it comes to the period of Moses, Moses does not know even who this God is. But everything until when they are on the foot of Sinai, they are given a constitution, they are given the laws. The reference, it is to Genesis chapter 12.
Okay.
Because this is when the calling of the nation starts. So the nation is not established at the time we see the Ten Commandments are given. This is where the process begins. By the way, the book of Genesis, it is the book of beginnings. And without this, we will not understand how the nation of Israel begins.
But the Bible calls them a nation only after God had instituted them as a nation. Even when Israel himself was having his own covenant with God with the striking of the hip, he was still not a nation. It was still a continuation of a promise. Even when he had sons growing up having their own families, they still were not a nation. When they went to Egypt during the time of the famine, they were still not a nation. When they grew into the thousands and became slaves in Egypt, they still were not a nation. Even when Moses came to take them out, they were still not a nation. They only became a nation when God instituted them as a nation, isn't it?
Exactly. So what we are saying is this. Here, what we are observing in Genesis chapter 12 is not the establishment of the nation, but it is the calling into a great nation. So here, we are talking about a plan of having a nation.
Okay.
So this is the calling. This is when the nation Let me put it this way. Maybe for simpler illustration. People don't know me. I come to you, we become my friend. Oh, no, that example is wrong. Let me use Abraham. God comes to Abraham, and he introduces himself to Abraham. And God and Abraham have a relationship. So God becomes the God of Abraham. Are we clear up to that point?
Yes, sir.
So he is only the God of Abraham because it's only Abraham who knows him. And as time evolves, What makes this relationship interesting? What makes this covenant interesting? It is the tenets, the conditions of this relationship or this friendship is that there are blessings inside, there's land inside, there's a nation promised inside, and all the world will be blessed through the seed of Abraham. So this is what is characterizing the relationship. Then Abraham will introduce God to his family. So when Abraham is gone, God becomes the God of Isaac. So he is the God of Abraham and God of Isaac. So how does Isaac come into the picture? Isaac must continue with the promise that was given to his father. Isaac will introduce God to his son, his children, and Jacob becomes, you know, understands this God and all these blessings come to him. But then the agreement is not with Jacob, it's with Abraham. So God is the God of Abraham, God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Jacob will have 12 sons. So who will become? So will he become the God of Judah? Will he become the God of Asher? Will he become the God of Dan? Will he become? So with this rising community, when the name of Israel, Jacob changes to Israel, God now is referred to as the God of Israel. They are not yet a nation, but they are a nation in progress. And God is not known anywhere else. He is only known in this community. But then when these people will go into Egypt, the knowledge of that God will be forgotten. People will forget who this God is. 430 years later, God will come back and says, I made a promise with my friend that I will make him great. The numbers have multiplied. So this promise now continues. When they go on Mount Sinai, he's giving them the laws to say, where you are going, we are going to fulfill the promise that is given in what? Genesis chapter 12. So what we are discussing in Genesis chapter 12 in this covenant, it is the intent of God. I will make you into a great nation. They are not yet established.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Munis, I want us to conclude on that note. I'm running out of time. I need to move on to our next conversation. That's why I was insisting on the part of clarifying what the text says. The text does not say Israel was called at that point, but I hear what you're saying. You're saying theologically, you call it that as theologians, and I'll accept that, Mfundisi. I have no problem with that, right?
Sure.
All right.
So as we wrap it up, to put things in perspective, the call or the covenant of Abraham, it's the establishment of the promise that God will bless the whole world. But the starting point must start with Abraham. By the way, you'll be interested to note to say, even God himself was not known to the whole world, not until the prophecies of Isaiah are fulfilled. Now you can imagine how long it would take until...
That wouldn't be scriptural, Mfundisi, because we see God interacting with many other peoples before this. Let's have this conversation some other time, Mfundisi. My time is up, really. We do have Pastor Gideon already standing by. I want us to conclude this conversation so we can continue with our next conversation. But we'll call you after the show and see if we could have a longer conversation to clarify these things. You seem to have a lot of insights you need to share with us, and I'm most willing to hear you from that perspective.
No problem. It's been a wonderful presentation.
Thank you very much for this.
So interesting, yes.
All right, thank you very much, Mfundisi. That's how we're going to conclude our conversation with Pastor Farah.
Do you think the world is getting better or worse? Unsurprisingly, a huge majority of people today believe the world is getting worse. Maybe this global pessimism is the result of a culture bathed in bad news, or maybe we inherently know the earth-shaking truth presented at the heart of this book. Something is deeply wrong with our planet, and we are powerless to fix it. The Great Controversy not only unveils the origin of human degradation, but also discloses the titanic struggle raging below the din of pandemics and peril, corruption and carnage, murder and mayhem. In this astonishing work, you will discover that evil has a face, good has a champion, and sin has an end. If you want to prepare for the end of this world and the glorious world to come, you must read this book. Join the campaign to distribute millions of copies of The Great Controversy by Ellen G. White to people in and around your communities. Contact your local church for more information or text us at +27 73 470 3520. Adventist World Radio, SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.